The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
And welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. We are here in front of a live studio audience.
Thank you.
At the East Middle Public Library for our 105th live show. I'm here with my co-host, L-Man Jenny Feldy.
Thank you.
And we're going to be talking to, with, and about, which our special guest is right here, is award-winning musical theater writer and performer, Sarah Kaufman.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be here.
As I mentioned, we're just going to be talking to them in just a few minutes. But before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the news.
It's morphin' time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi
for your Wi-Fi.
As well as the fine folks of the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way for November the 21st. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Newsday Famous Resident Media, Shad Rabbit Art, Yasmin Array, The Hurricane, Millie Portez, and GTS Comics. If you all want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. Little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page. Also, on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a new discovered power source, the war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 and Issue 2 is on sale right now. And one of the special things we do for my comic is we also give a special designated shout-out. So there's a little button on there on if you want to help for donate for the comic. And we have a special designated shout-out for Jimmy Palmiotti. So thank you, Jimmy, for that.
All right, so that's the whole shout-out?
We got one.
I thought you were going to do a little dance, sing a little song.
No, we got one. You get a special designated shout-out. So that's why I make
that's it.
A designated shout-out, that's what they got. You want to give them a song? You want to give Jimmy a song? Let's hear it.
What's your favorite song? I sing it.
Jimmy, you're great.
I love it. I was going to sing the Alabama song by the Doors, but we'll do that another time.
As always, we take it away with the sad news. We have two bits of sad news this week. Singer Robert Peebo Bryson died recently of a stroke. He is most remembered as the official recording voice of the Disney films for Beauty and the Beast with Celine Dion and Aladdin's A Whole New World with Regina Bell. He was 75. Jen, were you a Disney child? Were you a Disney person?
You know this.
Well, I have to ask you every time because the listeners
may not know. I'm still not a Disney
child,
and I'm even older than I was and less of a child than last month.
So not a Disney fan?
I thought I was 90 years old at 5 years old, so no, not really, no.
Were you a Disney fan growing up? Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin?
Big on Mulan.
Big on Mulan.
They also have some of the most fabulous composers and lyricists of all time, probably. Alan Menken, ad nauseum. I could go on.
but no Beauty and the Beast, no...
I'm sure I saw both of them, but Mulan was my big
Mark,
favorite.
If you had to be the Beauty or the Beast, what character would you want to be?
The Ant? I'll be the Ant.
The Ant?
Yeah.
That's it?
I'm neither the Beauty or the Beast, I'm the Ant.
Oh, okay. Clever man, yeah. You should have a radio show.
Moving on to the second and last bit of sad news.
All right.
Actor and singer Anthony Stewart Head also died recently from complications of pneumonia. While appearing in a slew of movies and TV shows, he is perhaps best known for his role as the Prime Minister Michael Stevens for 23 episodes in the series Little Britain from 2003 to 2006, Uther Pendragon in the 43 episodes of the series Merlin, which ran from 2008 to 2012, and of course, Rupert Giles in 121 episodes of the series Buffy the Vampire Slayer from 1997 to 2003. He was 72. Now, Jen, I know I've asked you before if you were a fan of Buffy,
yes.
And you are.
I actually know what you're talking about for once.
Really?
R.I.P. Yeah, I know all about pneumonia and the Giles. He's a memorable guy.
Remember,
and Buffy. You couldn't have Buffy without him, right?
There
would be no Buffy without Giles.
That's right.
So.
What I find interesting is that he died.
Yeah.
Nicholas Brendan died, which was Xander.
Oh, my God.
And then Dawn also died recently. It's like within the past year and a half. Those three of them. It's crazy how
there's
like
a Slayer out there, and it's not Buffy. Or maybe it is.
Maybe
Sarah Michelle Gellar is the real Slayer in real life.
So? Is that what happened?
Hey, you never know.
You a fan of Buffy?
Oh, yeah.
You have fond memories of Giles?
Yeah. Well, and Willow.
Bedroom memories.
Mm.
Bedroom memories?
No, I thought it was an awakening for many.
I don't know, maybe. Giles is a handsome man. You never know.
Yes, it was definitely Giles.
The memories in the bedroom, the shower, the kitchen. You know, taking a walk.
What were you doing in the kitchen?
You know, you think about all types of things you need in the kitchen. A lot of times I'll call Mark with some nonsense. You never know. You never know, right? I could see doing a cooking show with Giles.
Oh, a cooking show. Is that what we're talking about?
I think he would be great for a cooking show.
Well,
yeah.
Not anymore.
Wait, come on. What do you think I'm talking about?
Cooking show.
You guys are confused. Uh-huh. Confused.
Okay. Something's cooking
already.
That's the sad news. So moving on for the non-sad news.
Mm-hmm.
From the...
That's a lot of nuts!
Department.
That's a lot of nuts.
The Scary Movie sequel, Part 6, for those of you keeping track, has taken the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in $54.3 million in ticket sales in its first week of release, beating out the new live-action He-Man film, which came in at the number two spot, making a disappointing $29.4 million also in its first week of release. For those of you keeping track, the Super Mario sequel is still the highest-grossing film of this year so far, with $428.5 million, and the Michael Jackson biopic is number two with $354.2 million. Jen, have you seen Michael Jackson or any of the other movies?
I have not seen Michael Jackson. Oddly, I was never really a fan too much, but I am a fan of Scary Movie.
Okay, well let me dissect this. So first,
I don't
of all,
like putting people down.
I can say that I've talked about this many times about being able to separate the art from the artist.
For sure.
And I think no matter what kind of a music fan you are, there's at least one Michael Jackson song you at least enjoyed at some point in time. Not even
I think
at least
I think
one.
There's like two, but I forget the names. Yeah, there's like one
right,
or two.
Right, so it's like,
yeah.
It's just one or two.
But I never played on repeat and repeat
right,
and repeat.
But it's like, if I don't like his song, I'm like, oh, I like this
I
one
just,
song.
You know what,
oh,
I was always confused by him and Prince. Like, I thought men, I was very confused by the way they acted, you know, as a young person. Like, now I get it, you
okay.
know, but like, I thought men were supposed to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know?
Really?
And then I see them doing all these hee hee, and it was just, it threw me off.
So I guess.
Like, I'm used to, like, the Doors, you know? Like,
right, right.
He was a more your stereotypical man.
Okay.
You know? So it took me a little while. Like, Dumb and Dumber. I didn't understand Dumb and Dumber either. Because
right.
I just thought they were dumb. But now I'm older, and maybe I was dumb. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, just interesting to see what hits. And that's why I ask so many questions, because your mind is in different places, different parts of your life.
This is true.
Yeah.
So, Scary Movie, you were a fan of the entire
Always.
Franchise?
Simon Rex
All
is hot. Simon Rex, huge fan.
I was a fan of Simon Rex. I always felt that he was an underutilized actor. Like, he should have been bigger.
He's getting his... He just got, like, a Grammy or an Oscar or something for a real acting role, and he's getting, finally, his respect. And
really?
Yeah, he tore it all over in a rap group. I saw it live. It was one of the best things I ever saw. I feel like, yeah, he's not super mainstream like Madonna, but, yeah, Simon Rex, he gets a lot of notoriety from a lot of people who know what's up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you? You saw a Scary Movie or Super Mario
We
Brothers?
Actually just saw the Backrooms movie, which...
I want to hear about that.
It was very cerebral and surreal.
Okay.
And it's one of those movies where, like, the second you walk out of the theater, you're like, I wonder what YouTube analysis videos have to say about this. Like,
yeah.
I'm so fascinated as the movie, you know, comes out on streaming and becomes more accessible to see all of the different interpretations that people come up with. Because it's really quite interesting what they've done.
What's your interpretation?
Oh, gosh. I wouldn't know where to begin. It was fascinating to like absorb because it felt like something I would need to watch twice in order to but something trauma.
Was it boring?
Memories. No. I think some parts of it could have been paced better, but overall it was a very enjoyable evening.
Okay. Interesting.
It's welcome. It felt like a short movie.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That's the best.
Mm-hmm.
It was want to leave with wanting more, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find that you prefer movies with a kind of an ambiguous type discussion movie afterwards, or do you just like straightforward, this is what the movie is, this is what happens, this is the end?
I tend to prefer movies that are less ambiguous, so you should probably take it as a good sign that even though this movie was a fair bit ambiguous, I still enjoyed it and would recommend it.
So this is just me hot potatoing off ideas, which is in my head. The movie Obsession came out, and that's also another movie that people are going crazy discussing about it online.
I gotta see that one, yeah.
Me too.
And that reminded me of the movie called Descent, which I saw 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're familiar with Descent?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I'm watching that movie, and it was two guys and two girls watching the movie who went to see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls, after the movie ended, they're like, she was cheating on this guy. And the guys are like, what are you talking about? And for spoilers for however old this movie is, there's a point in the movie where the girl is killing the bad guys and she accidentally kills the friend who was cheating on the guy. And that was a point of discussion between our friends. Was like, did she really, like, maybe she didn't accidentally did it. Maybe she kind of saw in the back of her eye, just kind of did it. While in the excuse of the world. And also, at the end of that movie, I don't know if you know, but they have like two different versions of that movie. So they have like the theatrical ending and then like the real ending. And that also was a form of discussion. Like, did she really get out at the end? And in the version in the theaters, it showed her escaping. But in the actual movie, she did not escape. And then they made a sequel of her actually getting out. So that was a discussion that I thought was a thing. So like, is that something that you're like, oh, I like that kind of thing? Or just like, bad guy hit the guy with the stick, he wins the end.
You know, I tend to prefer things that subvert expectations in the sense that I think a lot of stories kind of retread the same beats, but finding a way to do that but also examine where did those beats come from? Like, in what ways are they serving a modern audience, and in what ways could they be tweaked to serve a modern audience better?
Mm-hmm. So, moving on, from the This is the Best Way to Save the Movie Theater Business Department.
Okay.
None other than AMC Theaters has announced that they are again raising prices of the Stubbs A-List program, citing rising costs of operating its venues. Starting July 15th of this year, membership will cost $29.99 per month, which is a $2 increase from the price hike of which was in May of last year. All perks remain the same, which is patrons can see up to 4 movies every week in every format, including IMAX and Dolby. They also get free upgrades on popcorn and fountain drinks, as well as a $5 reward on every $50 spent. Executives say, even with this necessary price adjustment, A-List continues to offer you exceptional value, even costing only the price of seeing about 1 to 2 movies per month, especially when you enjoy premium formats or reserve tickets online. It really is now and will continue to be a terrific bargain. For those of you who aren't paying attention or care for this matter, the A-List program was created as an answer to MoviePass. You remember MoviePass? We talked about that?
Yep.
Where people could watch one movie a day for only $10 a month. A-List started at $19.95 per month. Of note, as of this recording, AMC is running under a $4 billion debt and has been using the throw everything against the wall and see what sticks approach to make up that lost money, blocking off the best seats, as we also talked about, for their members, as well as offering 50% off movie tickets on Tuesdays and Wednesdays by adding more advertising before screenings as a passive way to increase revenue. So they have a program, and they're raising the price of the program, and at the same time, they're putting more ads in the beginnings of movies. At the same time, they're cordoning off certain sections of the theater for their best practicing people to come in. Do you think this is a great way to save the movie theater business? Jen, I know you have your theories.
Is it a great way? No.
Is it a good idea?
But thinking like I'm trying to, you know, walk a mile in someone else's shoes. So while you're talking, I'm thinking, all right, let's say I'm on the board.
Right.
Honestly, this sounds like something I would do. I also think they're not thinking creatively enough, and they should use some of my ideas.
Which are?
Which is the drug dealing. By drugs, I mean they could incorporate Oreos, which might be more addictive than cocaine, and massages. You got massages, ooh, and you get the drugs. The food is a drug. And I don't, you know, but I guess they have that already. But they can think more, you know, how about Chinese food? How about, right? Also, they could have, like, a photo booth type of thing, because people love taking photos of themselves. So I can give them a whole bunch of ways. They're really not thinking out of the box enough.
Where would they put the photo booth?
If AMC...
I'll help them, okay?
If they had massage chairs, I think I would sign up for the A-list thing.
You would massage chairs.
Oh, that's you. I wouldn't even go for the movie. I would just go for the massage. I work out a lot.
Then why have a movie theater?
Massage chair.
Right. See?
But that's not really saving them. That's just changing your business.
No. You have to change a business to save a business. You can't stay the same and expect you don't do the same and get different results. So, yeah, no, this all makes sense to me. This is something probably I would do.
I think raising prices is a bad idea. I think if they just have more quality movies, lower the prices, you would get a better experience.
No, they can't lower the prices.
They can.
Doesn't necessarily decide which
movies can't
go, you know, national, though, do they?
What's that?
AMC doesn't decide which movies get distributed nationally. That's
right.
Well, I mean, they go through a distributor and they buy the movies, so they can choose and decide what movies they want to buy. The YouTube guy, Iron Lung,
mm-hmm,
Markiplier, they weren't going to carry his movie. Mm-hmm. They heard about it. It became a big overnight sensation by a viral overnight thing, grassroots movement. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we want to buy this movie. So they can. They can do whatever they want. They make the decision of what they want to buy. So they should just buy better movies, make better movies. Not increase prices for the same thing. Why increase prices for the same service? You're not getting anything better.
I'm just
because
they're
not thinking out of the box.
The movies that are receiving like these big Hollywood budgets, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's really up to the movie studios more than it is AMC.
Right, but then they also are charged. I mean, as we all, as I used to work in movie theaters, so as many people know, if you go to music video, if you go to a movie or a concert, whatever, the venue does not make money on the performer, right. They make money on the concessions.
And the massage chairs.
And the massage chairs.
And the drugs.
So then why charge so much for the concession items? Why not lower the price of the concession items then?
Well, the origin of popcorn, if I'm remembering correctly, that historically it was a really cheap snack. And that's part of how the movie theater stayed in business through the Great Depression.
Like $30 for it. And then they're making collectible buckets that people are charging $70 for.
That's wow. Jeez.
And they're like, it just doesn't seem like this is a good idea to have this special thing to make it more exclusive and then charge more money for it.
My thought was they could go local, find local filmmakers.
Ah, I like that.
And like, for, you know, do screenings that really appeal to each individual community. But I could see how that would be hard for a big national company to roll out.
Because they have to have boots on the ground and find out what each individual thing is.
Mm-hmm. It could be done, though.
It could be done. I used to work for Blockbuster, as I've mentioned many times, and they always had that corporate identity problem. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was a pendulum. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they went, let's do all the Blockbusters to be exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went the other way, like, oh, let's focus on small independent guys. So each Blockbuster, you had a Blockbuster here, they had a local filmmaker, his movie was in the Blockbuster. You have a Blockbuster over there, his movie's not there because it's a different local filmmaker.
Oh.
But then it went back and forth and back and forth. It was a very, then they kind of evened out so that every time there was a new releases, they had what was called the fifth row. So you had the shelves on Blockbuster, and the fifth row across the entire new release wall was all independent films.
Oh.
That was kind of the balance.
I think they just got to change the whole experience. I really do. Because a lot of people don't want to go, you know, they're sharing a seat that all these different butts have been in. That keeps people out, you know, with
I'd
COVID.
I'd share a massage chair.
Right, exactly. I mean, listen, I almost went to one of my friend's houses just because he has a massage chair.
Almost? You almost went there?
Well, yeah, because I have a lot to do. But but that was one of the draws. You see, I was like, well, I can use the massage chair. But if he didn't have the massage chair, I'm definitely 100, you know, now I'm 99% definitely, now, you know.
Change
the experience. I think they got to change it up.
Moving on.
Yeah.
From the, you're going to be reading the last in this one. From the, it works for the LIRR department. That's probably one of the last ones.
All right.
None other than Dark Horse Comics has announced that it has formed a comic book union. Dark Horse Workers United cites three primary goals: improving job security, wages, and benefits, increasing transparency and equity in the workplace to foster more comfortable communication between teams, in which integral workplace information is shared with the entire company, and 3, taking a seat at the table when it comes to critical decision making that impacts stakeholders, including workers. Union rep says,
"We are the workers that make Dark Horse a home to the unique comics, creators, and creative principles known around the world. Dark Horse publishes an expansive collection of titles that span a diverse spectrum of voices and genres. Creator rights were at the heart of Dark Horse's founding, and our company strives to make fair deals with artists and writers to this day. However, as the workers of Dark Horse, we are regularly undercompensated and discounted, despite our essential role in the publishing process. Unfortunately, this is all too common in creative industries. Our union is fighting to win the same dignity and support for Dark Horse workers that we promised Dark Horse creators. Our union fights not only to secure workers' rights for Dark Horse employees, but also to support the comics and entertainment industries at large to a better and brighter future for all."
Dark Horse CEO says,
"I'm pleased to announce that Dark Horse Comics is willing to voluntarily recognize Dark Horse Workers United as a recognized collective bargaining representative under standards established by the National Labor Relations Board, NLRB. Our representatives have reached out to the union's attorney to initiate the appropriate next steps in the process. I read your statement carefully, and I realize that organizing a union is not something people do lightly. It takes courage, coordination, and the level of trust in each other. I understand the employees' disappointment with how issues have historically been addressed. You've taken this step because you believe Dark Horse can be better. So do I. Over the years, this company has asked a great deal of its employees. People have poured themselves into this work, accepting conditions, absorbing uncertainty, and sometimes carrying burdens that were not always fairly distributed because they believed in what Dark Horse stood for. That belief is something we must honor. Dark Horse understands and accepts the obligation to change, and as we embark on this journey, we will do so in genuine partnership across the entire team. You hear that? Voluntary recognition is an unusual step for employers, but in doing so, Dark Horse intends to reaffirm its commitment that this new leadership wants to do things differently and enter into good faith bargaining. Not because we are required to, but because it is the right thing to do. The path to a strong Dark Horse runs through a workforce that feels heard, respected, and genuinely invested in the company's future, not one that feels like it must fight just to be seen. To our creators and licensors, the team at Dark Horse Comics has delivered excellence for you time and time again. We see that excellence. Dark Horse is committed to providing a more supportive environment to ensure that legacy continues. To fans of Dark Horse Comics, we care deeply, not just about the stories we bring you, but about how we bring them to life. With greater respect and improved working conditions, we'll build the Dark Horse you can believe in for more than just great comics. On behalf of the Dark Horse Comics leadership team, we look forward to sitting down at the bargaining table with Dark Horse Workers United and continue to build something of which we are all proud."
So, Comic Book Union.
Comic Book
That's
Union.
That's crazy that it took this long for something like this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
As an actor, producer, director, who does not like SAG.
Correct.
What are your thoughts?
I just don't have a use for them. I never met them, so I'm not going to say I don't like them. I just,
okay.
They're useless.
Who has no use for SAG.
I have no use for you.
And they have called against your couple of shoots that you were on, right? You said you were on some sets.
Yeah.
So, what are your thoughts of a comic book union?
I wish them go well. I wish them well. You know what? Try it out. Good luck. This is the only thing I have to say. Yeah, try it out. Good luck. You know, I got no skin in this game. I hope everyone treats each other nicely. You know, play fairly. You know, wear a helmet, all that. You know, by wear a helmet, I actually mean, like, be careful for what you get into. And this is something that a lot of actors don't think about because in SAG, a lot of brainwashed actors, sorry, but you're brainwashed if you're still, please, I hope I can be in SAG one day. The only way you're going to get health insurance, which is one of the main benefits of SAG, is I forget if it was 24 or 27,000 a year, but you had to make a certain amount.
Right.
So unless you were like a regular, I don't think you have to be a co-star, but you have to have a pretty big role in something, you're not getting benefits from SAG. You're just paying dues. So is this company going to have a bunch of people pay dues with no benefits, or are they going to pay dues and get benefits? So as someone that would be in the union, what am I paying? What am I getting? That's something I think a lot of people don't even think of because they just want to be part of something so bad.
Mm.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a proud member of the Dramatists Guild, and to share, hopefully a story that restores some faith in unions. They actually recently helped me out with a bridge grant to help me get through a really tough time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've been paying dues for years. And
it worked.
They literally, within 2 weeks, I've never gotten a bridge grant that quickly.
What is a bridge grant for listeners? What's a bridge grant?
A bridge grant from the Dramatists Guild is a small, a sum of money that they distribute to writers at pivotal financial moments.
Wow. So that's nice to hear. That's actually the only piece of union good news I've heard in 2026.
Oh, well, there you go.
So it's nice to hear.
Not only that, but the Dramatists Guild Foundation, which is the charity funded by the Dramatists Guild and the dues, they offer free rehearsal space for writers in New York City. So we just had our opening night concert the day before yesterday. Pretty much every single one of the rehearsals that we held for those concerts, I was able to host those rehearsals completely for free at the Dramatists Guild Foundation Music Hall and at the other rooms that they have for free.
And it's good condition?
Oh, it's beautiful. They have a big grand piano.
Look at that. Yeah. A success story.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So that's the Dramatists Guild.
Okay.
It's a great union.
And that's for people who write theater, right?
Everyone who is a theater writer can rent those spaces. You don't even have to be a member who pays dues.
But not theater actors.
No, it's specifically for writers because it's Dramatists Guild.
Gotcha.
Like a dramatist is someone who writes music for musical theater or writes as a playwright.
I call my mom a dramatist. Wondering, try to get her some free money, so dramatic.
If she wants to pay dues, I doubt they'd turn her
down.
She
pays dues. She loves unions. She loves being part of something.
It was a really proud moment when I received my my union card that said Dramatists Guild on it. It was lovely.
Very nice. So, hey, maybe Dark Horse can learn from
what do you think that a comic book company was their first, I think it's their first comic book union.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty wild to think that, A, it took so long, and B, that they actually accepted it, because usually big companies don't like unions.
I mean, this is the first that I'm hearing about the situation, so obviously I'm not going to provide the most educated take, but I mean, it sounds like even the CEO is acknowledging that there were some issues that were unfairly distributed, and he said everything, if I were an employee who felt so strong, who felt so strongly that I felt I needed to unionize, everything said here would give me a lot of faith that the company is going to act in good faith and work with me and my people to make sure the work is fair for everyone. That said, actions speak a lot louder.
Exactly.
So you can say all the right things, and if that doesn't lead to any actionable steps,
The thing about a comic book union, it's weird because a lot of it is freelancers. So having known the industry how it works, it's really odd that they would be able to form a union. That's probably why it took so long.
I'm a freelance writer in the Dramatists Guild.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then to see what kind of power the union has to direct what the company makes. Now, obviously, this is just for Dark Horse Comics, but if this does work, I'd be interested to see where we would go with Marvel, because that's owned by Disney, and we know how Disney is. So I'm very curious to see. Hopefully, this will work and be beneficial to everybody involved, make everybody a lot of money, and there won't be any problems. But as it stands, if you have a strike for a comic book, that's going to be crazy to think about. And because of the way comic books work, you won't even see the damage, much like when the Screen Actors Guild went on strike. You don't see it until months down the line, so you don't even notice it, as opposed to when the LIRR went on strike. It took one day of Monday, and all right, we got to fix this. So I find it to be a very interesting place that we're at. So I hope that it works out well. I'm very curious to see where it goes, and I guess we'll be following it as time comes.
I would just love to know how this came about. I would love to know the insider ins and outs. Like, maybe a bunch of people are going to quit, and they're like, oh, we'll give you a union. I don't know. Or maybe they want to get more people working for them. Maybe they want to have more people publishing with Dark Horse, because that would make me want to publish with Dark Horse rather than someone who can't look me in the face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
So that's it for the news. So we're going to take a quick break in front of a live studio audience.
Hey. Thank you, guys. Thank you for being here.
We'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
All right.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com.
Hey everybody, this is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From The Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From The Radio. Get out. Get out.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. We are here live in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
At the East Meadow Public Library for our 105th live show. I am joined by my co-host, L-Man Jane Feldy.
Thank you for having me.
And we're here with, got to read the title, award-winning musical theater writer and performer, Sarah Kaufman. Now, usually, as I mentioned many times on the show, I've known the person beforehand, but this is actually the first time meeting.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about yourself, and we'll take it from there.
Absolutely, yeah. My name is Sarah Kaufman.
So Sarah, not Sar.
Yeah, like air with an S on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't you read, Mark? It's air with an S. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much what it says on the tin. I write musical theater. I am not a novelist, despite evidence to the contrary. I was featured in a couple of newspapers.
Okay.
For
musical theater writing.
Oh,
I would hope so.
Maybe it was like her love interest. Maybe it was like some TMZ stuff.
No, I was in contention for Love on the Spectrum once.
I'm watching that show, and I just told my dad and his entire dental office on speaker last night from the shower that they gotta watch that show.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I think I was too shy for them, because they were like, do you have any crushes? And I was like, I don't want to say.
Oh,
they were like,
no.
This is a TV show where you have to. And I was like, I understand.
Go back on. I love that show. I love it.
I'm too much of a private person.
But, but you're a performer, so
yes.
How are you? Well, explain that.
It's
difference.
Different.
It's so different.
Explain
it
to me, please.
Talking about your own life is inherently different from playing a character. Because when you're playing a character, you are not you.
Correct.
But what if the character you're playing is you?
But it's not.
It's not.
It can't be.
I have
Why
different,
can't it be?
I have different
What do you think
versions
I'm writing as a version?
Play.
You're getting a version of me right now.
But
you're not getting the version I was 2 hours ago in my kitchen.
But you're getting the kitchen. But you're still but you're still you.
I am, but it's whenever I walk into a room that's public, or whenever I even walk outside my door, because everything is recorded nowadays, we're getting spot cameras, you're going to be recorded while you're driving or your car. I just say, okay, I'm public now. And there's a public persona, and even people who have analyzed me who are like famous psychics, they said, you know, you come off real. And I am real. It's a version of myself that's real, but I can filter real fast. And it's a totally different person than when I'm on the phone with you, maybe at 1 a.m. talking to you. I know, or I think I'm not being recorded. It's a different version. This is going out to the public.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's totally different.
I would say the biggest thing about me is probably I am a musical theater writer, and I am big on accessibility. So making art that is accessible to new communities, especially communities who've historically been left out of the picture when it comes to theater.
When it becomes musical theater, are you always thinking of songs in the back of your head and writing a story around a song? Or you're writing a story, and then, like, what song would fit into the story?
Good question.
It's always story first for
story
me.
Story first.
Yeah, story, then lyric/melody, and then the rest.
Is there, like, a specific timing? Like, there has to be 3 songs per X amount of words, or per story? Or is, like, I have to insert a certain song in every single part? Or is it just,
it feels
right?
It's different for each project.
Really?
Because form follows, or function follows form. I did a 10-minute musical inspired by my grandfather's work in vision psychology.
Okay.
So specifically on the moon
vision.
Illusion. Yeah.
Ah.
Have you heard of the moon illusion?
No.
So have you ever noticed that the moon looks really, really big when it's on the horizon?
Okay.
Yep, and then it looks much smaller when it's right above your head. That is called the moon illusion.
Yeah.
People have been speculating about this since the time of Aristotle. Yeah. And my grandfather was the psychologist who finally figured out why that happens. And it has a lot more to do with your brain than it does your eyeballs. So I wrote a musical that sort of tracked the history of this illusion from the time of Aristotle through my grandfather's time to today. And so that was almost entirely sung through, and we didn't receive really any significant dialogue until we reached the modern era, because it was, it's like we're telling this story, this is all musical because it is a part of the story, and then here we have arrived at the present and now we can speak.
So what kind of influences in music are incorporated into your work?
Like this work specifically, or just in general?
Well, let's go with this work specifically.
The moon.
Absolutely. Basically, 2020, like many others, I was completely unemployed, fun-employed, if you will.
Fun-employed.
The only thing I really had going for me was a D&D game run by my friend Chloe.
Yeah.
And I was completely obsessed, because there was nothing else going on in my life. It was such a special thing to be a part of. And it was also, it was our only chance to interact with other people the entire week, even if it was just virtually. And so for Chloe's birthday, to thank her for creating this really beautiful, vibrant world for us to all play around in, I decided I was going to write her my character's backstory. So I sat down, her birthday's like a week away, I'm thinking this will be a fun like 3,000 word, maybe 5,000 word little thing, and I emerge 1 week later with a 63,000 word novel.
A week later?
Yeah.
63,000 words in a week?
Yeah,
Holy shnikes.
And all the same.
And so,
okay.
And so that's how the novel, The Reality Shaper, came to be, is it all just sort of came out of me all at once.
Whoa.
And, yeah.
So this was for a close friend of yours.
This is, yeah,
about
this is
a character.
Chloe. There's actually
your character in D&D, correct?
It was, yeah, based on my character's backstory. And if you scroll, this is Chloe right here.
Cute.
There's a picture.
She looks like a very nice girl.
She is a very nice girl.
We can tell sometimes from people's faces.
She's also absolutely savage when she needs to be.
I can see that.
Which is good.
I can see that. But she could also be really girly, and you might not think that she could be savage, right? Maybe.
Yeah. No, she's a broad with a blade.
Okay, so for me, I wrote a health guidebook. I'm throwing back to you, don't worry. And every page, almost every page, was some client of mine needed some piece of information, or they asked me a question. I said, well, I'm going to have to write you a couple pages. And that's the way the entire book, 145 pages, came about, because someone needed it. So do you find when you're writing for someone or someone's in mind, it's easier rather than, I'm just going to write a story and I hope everyone likes it.
Every single thing that I write is to or for someone specific from my life. This is for Chloe. Every single one of my other books was dedicated to a specific person, and it's reflected in the writing. One of the people to whom I dedicated a book really loves, we're familiar with A Gilligan Cut.
No, I'm not familiar.
A Gilligan Cut is, for example, a character says, no, absolutely not. We are not going hiking. I hate hiking. And then
you go hiking.
You literally cut to that character hiking and pouting about it.
I just watched a show last night that happened.
Yep, that's called a Gilligan Cut. Not sure why. Maybe
watch the Four Seasons on I think Netflix or something, they do that a lot.
But
thank you.
This was a favorite of someone who I dedicated a book to.
Okay.
And so that book has a couple of Gilligan cuts in it, which is distinct from the other books. Because they fairly absent from the others. But yeah, every single thing that I write is for someone. Moon Illusion was for my grandpa.
For your grandpa. Mm-hmm. Do you know anyone in real life who does a Gilligan cut who's like, no, and then they do it? Do you know anyone?
Yes.
I could relate that a little.
The exact same friend.
Oh, the exact same friend? And then they're doing it?
Is the exact same. Can I tell this story? Yes. Okay, they're here tonight.
Oh, cool.
The audience member says yes, so it's fine.
There you go. So, love a little consent.
Yeah, so that's Kai over there. And for years, I begged Kai to watch Trouble with Tribbles with me.
Okay.
The episode from Star Trek, the original series.
Okay.
Not you should binge Star Trek with me, not you should watch all of Star Trek with me, just you should watch Trouble with Tribbles. It's a really great episode. I think you would like it. Also, this person is really into history and, like, TV history and, like, the 60s especially. So I'm like, I feel like you would really actually like this show. Every time it's like, no. I don't like Star Trek. I'm like, if you've never watched Star Trek, how do you know you don't like Star Trek? Yeah. Oh, well, I don't like Star Wars. I'm like, okay, but they're not same thing.
That's my logic, exactly.
I don't like Star Wars either. Okay. I'm a Star Trek loyalist.
Okay.
Finally, I had a bad day, came home. They were like, you want to watch Trouble with Tribbles? I was like, yes, absolutely. I want to watch Trouble with Tribbles. So put on Trouble with Tribbles. We watch it. I'm cracking up. You know, they're keeping a poker face. We finish the episode. I'm like, thank you for watching that with me. They don't say anything. They just say, you're welcome. The next day, we're trying to decide what we're going to watch. I'm like, what do you want to...
Again?
What do you want to watch? They're like, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess... You can watch some more Star Trek. If you want to watch some more Star Trek, jump forward a month. They are going to a Star Trek convention upstate without me.
That is hilarious. Yeah. Without you.
Without me.
It was not a month.
Wow. It was a few weeks.
So I want. I just have to know, because I can relate to this entire thing. You're just. Am I your friend? Is that what you're describing? What was it? Can we know what was it about Star Trek that they thought it was, and then they found that it was something
else?
They
thought, like, it was Star Wars, and it's not Star Wars.
Right. That's me too.
Star Trek is.
It's not.
It was marketed as a space western, but it's so much its own thing. It really, just go watch.
You know,
Trouble
Star Wars is really giving Star Trek a bad rap. That's all I got.
And they have nothing to do with each other.
Okay.
Star Trek is hilarious.
Okay.
Go watch Trouble with Tribbles.
Okay.
If you like it, you might like Star Trek.
Got it. All right. So you already answered my first question.
Okay.
How did the reality?
Yes.
How did this come about? And now you have...
Yeah, well, so I wrote the book for Chloe. I sent it to Chloe. Now, Chloe and I went to theater school together.
Right.
And Chloe has, for years, supported my theater writing and my songwriting. And so pretty much the second I sent over this book, Chloe was like, okay, reality shaper, musical, when? And I said, Chloe, it's a 63,000-word novel.
Yeah.
You can expect a musical round about the time 6.5-hour musicals come out. But here's the thing, is I had just been diagnosed with autism.
In 2020?
2020.
Okay.
I was 22 years old.
Oh, wow.
I had never, I mean, I think I had known peripherally, but I really became involved in the disabled community. I realized how inaccessible theater is, not only to the disabled community, but also to people who can't afford the skyrocketing prices of theater tickets, people who geographically just don't live in a place where there is a lot of theater. And so there was a lot kind of going through my mind at that time about how to make theater that was more accessible.
Right.
And that's when I came to the thought that you could take what was so wonderful about audio-only musicals such as 36 Questions and In Strange Woods and create a form of musical theater that would be accessible to all of these groups. So what the Reality Shaper became is
Got
a
it.
6.5-hour podcast musical broken into 11 roughly half-hour episodes.
Got it. So it's like more like an audio book?
It
sort of.
Are you familiar with an audio play?
Yes.
Yeah,
an audio
play with music. So it has an opening number, it has a closing number, it has character establishment songs.
Got it.
Every episode is its own contained 30-minute musical, beginning, middle, and end.
Wow.
So when you did that, did you have to rewrite the book to form into the half-hour segments, or was that already the way
There was some total restructuring going on. There are some parts of the book that happen really, really early on, and then in the podcast they happen closer to the middle of the arc. There was a lot of shifting moments around and changing beats around, condensing things. There was a lot of rewriting involved. The book stayed the same structure because I think it was an ideal structure for a novel, but that structure isn't necessarily going to translate to an episodic piece.
Is that a different train of thought when you're adapting your own work for a different medium?
I think it's easier in some ways, because something about this story just has always been very, I think, intrinsic to the way that my brain and my creativity works. So it's very easy for me to distinguish a change that keeps the integrity of the story and the characters intact and a change that would change something fundamental.
That's actually kind of a cool thing. I've actually had my work adapted, and it's an amazing experience. Somebody else adapted my work, and just seeing the, how that process is and collaborating with that person, it blows my mind how it's different but the same.
Yeah.
So when you're doing the podcast for a half-hour segment, so you're doing it fully musical, you're doing all the voices, you have a cast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, our first two episodes aired yesterday. Yeah, our episode 1 and episode 2 came out. We have a full cast. It's 30 or 40 different voice actors and singers.
Wow.
So now,
a lot of them are currently on Broadway.
And they're all in the same location recording, or you get them all on a Zoom call recording?
Well, all of the dialogue recording was done in Brooklyn over the course of 2 or 3 weeks.
Separate individual recordings.
A lot of the music was also captured in that time, but there was some music that we were unable to capture in that time that was captured. Actually, do you know Has-Been Hotel?
I've heard of it.
Andrew Underberg, who does music, is a friend of mine from BMI.
That's awesome.
And he graciously allows us to use his studio.
That's amazing.
So a lot of the music was recorded there.
Oh, so you layer them, you do everything individually, and then layer them?
Well, with the music especially, it sometimes requires a different environment from dialogue, which can be more forgiving because we're going to be layering in.
You do it in your kitchen, Call back,
Now, my question is, when you're doing this type of thing, and then you see the finished product, how close is it to what you originally had in mind?
That is such a good question. I've been working on, I wrote the book in 2020. I've been working on the podcast for 6 years. The first two episodes dropped yesterday. I don't think it's fully sunk in because Monday night we had our launch concert in Williamsburg where we brought a bunch of the cast together to sing some songs from the season.
Yeah.
And that was a wildly ambitious and successful event. It was so wonderful to just imagine like all of your favorite people in one space singing. I don't think I've had any time to really process, but I think it turned out a lot better than I thought it was going to. We have just a dream team. The music lead on our team right now, Ammon Taylor, came to me and was like, these are the people who I want to go out to first. And I was like, yes, absolutely. I love all of these people. We got our first choice of everyone. We got our first choice, mixer, masterer, audio, vocal, post-production vocal engineer, drummer, and orchestrator. Like, first choice, everyone, and you can hear it. Like, I'm blown away by the work that they've done.
Wow. So you're going to do another one? It's like you just finished.
Yeah, after 6 years. Well, we are planning to try and get some crowdfunding for another season. I think our ability to do another season is going to be contingent upon the crowdfunding.
Same topic, or would you just switch?
Well, there's five books. So the season one is book one, and then we could have potentially five seasons, one for each book.
Right. Wow. And this is all in a week. It's all written in a week, but it's funny how something you write in a week, right? Can take 6 years to actually come to fruition.
Yeah, well, and I held off on self-publishing the book until I knew the podcast was going to be coming out because I figured it would be great cross-promotion.
Yeah. Wow. What's the biggest challenge with, I guess, the podcast part? Like, what's something, or maybe something that you were surprised by, that you're like, oh, I didn't know I had to know about this stuff. Like, what's something you learned about?
Well, it's all of the stuff you don't think about.
Like, right, exactly.
Like, how specifically do you cue and schedule something on Libsyn to make sure it comes out at the exact right time? And then do you release the episode at 7, like, before a bunch of people are going to be commuting? Or do you release it at midnight to make sure it's synced to all of the different podcasts, but like all of these things that you have to think about as they come up. The strategy that I developed was getting way, way, way ahead of myself at all times. I would be solving problems that were like 3 or 4 weeks away.
Great.
And that way, when problems came up in the moment, mm-hmm. I had the bandwidth to solve them because I'd already solved the rest of today's problems 3 weeks ago.
But that probably helps you not only get the people on board you wanted to, because mm-hmm. they probably saw that, because mm-hmm. people can tell, and keep them. Because mm-hmm. that's how you lose people, too, by not doing that.
Oh, but you lose people by being efficient, too. There are definitely, as you know, as an artist yourself, there are some people in our industry who would much rather art never come with deadlines or any kind of accountability or...
But then you lose the unprofessionals, but you usually keep the professionals. Well, there's professionals who also can't keep time. There's some really talented people.
There are some really talented people who would really prefer that there never be deadlines for anything.
Yeah.
And that's what I'll say about that.
Yeah.
I know some people like that.
No.
I don't want to. I mean, it depends. Yeah, I don't want a deadline.
Collaboration is hard, and working on a team is hard, and I don't think we talk about that enough. Like, I've had two writing partnerships fall apart over mm-hmm. the past 6 years just because priorities shift, and someone mm-hmm. might commit to doing something a year ago, mm-hmm. and then by the time it comes time to deliver, their life is different in some significantly substantial way, and they're no longer able to do it, but then things get in the way mm-hmm. of being able to change plans, right? And whether that's ego, whether that's fear, whether that's, a kind of misguided attempt to preserve like a personal relationship, mm-hmm. things get in the way of people being able to effectively communicate with each other, and it's so tough, it's so hard.
I had a 2.5-hour conversation based on literally just who you're collaborating with, who you're partnering with, who you're working for, psychoanalysis of everyone, because unfortunately or fortunately you have to really get into the psychology and scheduling. Can this person do this or that? Do you have to kind of gossip actually to learn about it? Because gossip is evolutionary helpful to keep the tribe and keep you safe. If you don't gossip and know what's safe and what's not, you're going to die.
Right. And it also helps to set unspoken social standards. Like, if someone... I don't know. My philosophy has always been, if you don't want me talking about your behavior to other people, that probably says more about your behavior than it does about my discussion of it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Or you can talk well about them, too.
I talk well about everyone. I talk on and on about how brilliant my friends are. Mm-hmm. Evan Michael Smith, who was in Moon Illusion and was also in the concert day before yesterday, always constantly doing these beautiful queer shows all across Manhattan. I am blown away by their stamina. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they do it. They're all over the island.
Cocaine. Magic mind.
Yeah, my partner says I'm not allowed to do cocaine.
No, don't. I have a strict rule. Don't.
You say it like you're an expert.
Because I've worked, comedians are experts in cocaine. No, I won't. Cocaine is, it always is a problem. Nope. And alcoholism. Yeah, that's even alcohol, it's a problem.
I did at one point decide to become an alcoholic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it lasted about 2 hours.
2 hours?
Yeah. I finished half a can of Angry Orchard.
Good, that's great. You don't need it. And also, it's becoming trendy to not drink anymore either.
I never got into it.
Good,
I love a mocktail.
Yeah, you don't need it. Yeah, health is wealth, baby, right?
Yeah, girl.
Yeah, you need.
I go to the
strength.
Gym. That's my drug of choice. I can do a handstand.
I cannot. I cannot. I've tried. This is great. This is an impressive guest we have.
So
I've learned a lot.
Social media time.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Where can people find out more about you? Where can they listen to the podcast? Where can they get all your stuff? Go.
I am at Sarah Kaufman. That's SairKaufman at Sarah Kaufman on Instagram and on TikTok. You can also follow the podcast at The Reality Shaper, spelled exactly like that, on TikTok and Instagram as well. And to buy the book or listen to the podcast, you can go to www.therealityshaper.com.
And you're kind enough to give away a book.
Oh, yes! I'm giving away a copy of the book. I'm happy to sign it. I haven't signed it because I know some people don't want it to be signed, but I'm happy to sign it, whoever receives it.
Who wouldn't want it to be signed? Crazy.
Some people don't.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But we're also giving away two tickets to Trek Long Island, which is actually this weekend, June 12th to 14th. So since you're our guest, you get to decide, is it going to be one package? Do you want two separate raffles? And which one?
Oh, gosh.
It's all on you.
Okay.
Want to do it separate?
That's, wait, hang on. I feel like we should take a poll. Okay, audience.
I like this.
Raise your hand if you want
It's an
one
audio
person.
Show. We need noise.
Okay, yell enough. If you want one person to win it all.
Yeah.
Ah! Okay, that's one vote for one person. Yell if you want to split this up into different raffles.
Split.
Yeah. Oh! Okay, that's at least five for different raffles.
All right, so now it's your option. We do the tickets first, or we do the book first?
Yeah. let's do book first and then tickets.
Book
I
first.
Feel like everybody's here for the tickets, so that's probably the big ticket item.
No, yeah, all
right, so no looking.
Okay, but if Kai wins this one, I'm picking a different thing.
What?
37. You already have a copy of that.
You can get another one. 30? You can have two. It's
I
not
don't.
Like a law.
Yeah. I do have a t-shirt. I don't have a copy of the book.
37, 67, 47.
67, 47. Yeah,
there
you go.
There we go. You have
book?
A copy of the book already.
You want, all right, you want the book. Okay. So now this is for the tickets.
For the ticket.
Kai.
No looking.
I'm not peeking. 37, 67, 48.
48.
Didn't you pull one for Kel?
I did pull one for Kel. And Kel probably had it because he's recording, so he's not looking at his ticket. Are you 48? There we go. You got the ticket.
Yeah, there we go.
Yay.
Yay.
Oh, I'll do it in a second.
Okay.
Almost out of time. Final thought?
I wanted the book.
Yeah.
I'm not giving it up.
Oh, man. I didn't know we'd be fighting over it. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Me and a team of some of the most spectacular rising creatives that I know worked for 6 long years on this podcast. So if you like Dungeons and Dragons, if you like fantasy, if you like musical theater, I would love for you to check it out. I sent Mark the trailer, so that might like
play on right,
play
after,
on
this.
Right
yes.
after this. So
cool.
If it sounds cool to you, give it a shot.
Jen, right. Final thought?
Yes, photon energy hitting your skin, the sunlight hitting your skin actually changes you on a molecular basis. It actually breaks apart 2 carbon atoms and changes you as a person and changes 300 biological processes. So go outside and get some sun for at least 15 minutes and your body's going to work. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Mm. So my final thought is this. Thank you so much for being a guest on our show. It was a pleasure meeting you. I really love the journey because I can
relate.
Empathize and relate to the journey. Yes, I'm a little different, but I can see from the conception to something, then having changed to something else and having it grow, and that you did in such a small amount of time and that now it's a large part of your life and you have much more investment into it, and it's such a big deal. I can see it in your eyes and it's really, really cool. So congratulations on that.
Bravo.
Much continued success. I look forward for season 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
So guys, make sure if you like crowdfunding, go check out her
and
stuff.
And don't burn out.
You can pre-save our Kickstarter.
You gotta rest.
There you go. So that about does it for this week on the Came From the Radio. Join
That's
us
it.
Right here and every week on this radio show. If you miss any part of the show, go to our website, www.itcamefromtheradio.com. We have our next live show, which is going to be on Wednesday, July 8th. And for this one,
oh yeah,
we're going to have L-Man Jenny Feldy is going to be
Uh-oh.
Hosting the show
Uh-oh.
With special guest, designated creator, Mark Torres.
I've heard of him. I've heard of him.
Interesting. Show
I
to
like
see Jen host it and me be the guest. So
yeah,
if you guys
want
to check it out, make sure you guys come down. Thanks for being part of Lights with the Audience.
Yay.
Thank you guys.
And
Thank
we'll
you.
See you next time.
All right.
Once upon a time in the fantastical city of Cedrella, there was a guardsman named...
Boris.
Cadet Boris Dragonheart.
Boris Dragonheart. I've seen Boris forever.
Boris.
I want to do what's right.
Boris Dragonheart.
I want to do what's good.
And he's a bit of a goody-two-shoes.
I want to do everything and anything I should.
Whose life gets thrown into chaos when he discovers something dark happening under the surface of his city.
How could so many kids go missing without anyone noticing?
Unsure who to trust, will Boris crack under the pressure? Or will he team up with the very dangerous criminal he just met?
I am the big bad.
You're not very big.
I am the big bad.
Seriously, what are you, like 5 feet?
That's me. Is this a buddy cop situation or enemies to lovers? Will he get his big victorious hero's welcome? Or is this song just in the trailer as a red herring? Find out in season 1 of The Reality Shaper, a musical podcast.
launching June 9th, 2026.
Now get out of my house, Boris!
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.